part of what we've got to develop more than it's already there at Aspen is this idea that all of us are growing our capacity to give and keep our word. There's nobody at Aspen who does that perfectly. There's nobody at Aspen who does that all the time. And it's why it's in the design that we have breakdowns. It's in the design that human beings don't keep their promise. And so creating a culture where we recognize that we're working on promises that we can't currently keep, and that the cleaning up the mess is the thing that grows our capacity.
Hi, Aspen. This is Jim and Tricia. It was really great to be with you for the virtual training that we did in January on integrity. And we hope this podcast will just help go deeper with some of the concepts. We hope we can answer some of your questions and make some different kinds of application. You're going to be invited to be part of a group to discuss this further, and Becky will be giving instructions for that.
Yeah, and so for this quarter, we've got three goals related to these podcasts. This is one of several that you're going to get. So let me tell you what those goals are from our perspective. The first goal is that we, in the integrity conversation, we talked about cleaning up messes. And we see that as a skill set that for most of us starts out being really uncomfortable, but with practice that you can increase your capacity over time. And so our first goal is to practice cleaning up messes in real life situations at Aspen. Our second goal is to see how the integrity conversation fits with the bigger picture of accountability and shared responsibility at Aspen, as we, as you guys have been making the transition from to Aspen 2.0 to the new vision, to the Vision 2025. Accountability and shared responsibility has been a big part of the conversation, and we think the integrity conversation gives you insight and access to some things you might not have otherwise. And then the third goal that we have is to address the obstacles to practicing integrity as a way of life. One of the big mistakes that people make is that they think they've learned something if they've heard the information and they understand the information. And so we want to be really clear that we believe that integrity has a set of practices that go with it, that we're going to be naming and encouraging you in your small group conversations, in your real life work at Aspen to master these skills. So those are our three goals.
I'm really glad you said that about practices, because it really is a goal for us in this particular podcast, not to get too deep into a lot of theory, but to say this is a way of life that can completely transform an organization. And exactly. I often go in to work with an organization and I have this mental picture that, you know, these wonderful people who are part of this organization are just living in piles of rubble or piles of trash that represent all the conversations that haven't been had, all the responsibility that hasn't been taken, you know, just all the messes that haven't been cleaned up. And they're trying to work and get things done and be efficient and productive. And they're doing that in an emotional landscape that's just full of rubble and sometimes garbage. And so this is the practice of both clearing out some of that and making sure it doesn't build up again. So a starting place, I think, would be to say, you know, well, I don't see any of that mess. What do you mean by a mess? And so as a quick reminder, we create a mess when we act in ways that are not workable, or when we don't act in ways that would be workable. In other words, there is just a way that things work, that things are designed to work. And when we do things that don't work, we contribute to a mess. And when we don't do things that would work, we contribute to a mess.
And so let's drill down on that just a little bit and see if we can get some nuance to it. It's real clear I think, when we have this conversation with people, that if you make a promise, like an explicit promise where you say, I will have this to you by Friday at 3 o'clock, or you need this report and I can get this to you by this time. I think it's really clear to people that when we give our word to something like that, something very explicit and tangible, that if we then don't meet the deadline, we don't do what we said we would do, then that creates a mess. It makes things not workable, because whatever that report was depending on ripples down to somebody else's work and ripples down to somebody else's work. In the webinar, we talked about that we give our word, and what that means is that I do what I said I would do when I said I would do it, and in the manner that it was meant to be done. And so in your common life at Aspen, breakdowns occur in the various moving parts, and that results in a mess. When you don't communicate about the mess, when you don't acknowledge that there's a mess and take responsibility for the mess, then, to use Tricia's word picture, the rubble just piles up higher and higher. And so that's one way to think about it, is I made a promise, an explicit verbal promise that I haven't fulfilled on.
I want to come back to that real quickly, though, and say, you know, you use that word responsibility. As soon as I become aware of the mess, then it's up to me to take responsibility, you know, to move toward helping to clean that up. And I just know that when people hear the word responsibility, we often hear the word blame.
Right, exactly.
And we just want to be really, really clear.
Crystal clear.
In our mind, those are two completely different concepts.
Right. Right. So, yeah. So let's just back up a step. So I give my word to have a report turned in, and I don't get it turned in. And there are some places where it's just simply I didn't do what I said I was going to do. But often the breakdowns are the result of multiple moving parts, where you ask the question, so whose fault is this? And some people contributed by what they did. And some people contributed by what they didn't do. And some people contributed by what they said. And some people contributed by what they didn't say. And if you just will dig down a little bit into that, you begin to realize, boy, when you've got, you know, studios and superintendents and the ELT, and you've got all those moving parts that are all connected to, then whose fault is it? It's not anybody's fault, but it's everybody's responsibility. And so, yeah, to distinguish between blame and responsibility, what we would say is there's not any value in asking the question who's blame, because everybody's to blame in some way.
But, or there just is no blame.
Or there just is no blame. Yeah. But then to ask the question, what does it look like for me to be responsible for the mess? That, like, if we could leave this podcast with everybody at Aspen saying, anytime I see a mess, I'm going to give up trying to blame somebody, and I'm going to ask the question, how do I help take responsibility for this?
Oh, yes, exactly. That would be just like magic, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. And it's a learned skill, so we're holding out hope that you're going to grow your capacity, but no expectation that you're going to magically start doing this. Let me say one more thing about this. So we talked about the explicit giving your word and that sort of thing. I think there's another thing to say about workability and messes, and that is that human beings are designed, when we talk about the design, human beings are designed to be treated with kindness, with respect, and with dignity. And it is important for us to acknowledge and to own that we also make a mess when we don't treat people like that. So, you know, hi, I'm Jim, and I'm a recovering rageaholic. I grew up as a young man who came to adult life with a lot of anger issues, and I've spent a lot of my lifetime working on trying to learn how to manage that anger. What I can see looking back, and I've just, like, you know, like over the years have made enormous progress in being able to manage all that. What I can look back is that when I related to people in my family or in my workplace with anger, the ripple effect of the mess that I was making, was significant. And what I learned over time was that even though you would think, well, Jim got angry, that's his responsibility, what I learned over time was that it was the responsibility of some other people in my organization who didn't say to me, hey, when you do that, that creates all kind of chaos around you. You need to stop doing that. So I contributed by being angry. Somebody else contributed by not giving feedback to me about the impact of my behavior. And so there is this explicit thing, and then there's this implicit assumption that we have that I think you have to take on, that human beings are designed to be treated with kindness and respect and with dignity.
I just really, I like that a lot. First of all, I mean, I can attest that you have done some really, really good work on, I'm going to say I'm just learning for that to be more workable in your relationships, you know, and in fact, I would say completely workable. You know, I'm probably a little different. My unworkability is often more about I'm trying to look good and therefore I'm not going to say what there is to say. Mm-hmm. And that's not workable either. You know, it doesn't look like anger. It, you know, often I'm able to conceal what's not working long enough. And yet it still isn't the way things are designed to work. So,
Can I just mm-hmm. do one quick illustration? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I worked when I first became the executive director of a large not-for-profit. There was a woman who was the administrative assistant for me, and she was wired a lot like you were. And so I would come in and say, hey, let's do blah, 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 blah. And what I didn't recognize in the moment was that I just asked her to do 40 hours of work where I had no clue what amount of time it was going to take her to get that done. And so what she would end up doing, because she wanted to please me, is that she'd work on weekends and at night to get the job done. And the first time that she grew her courage to say to me, Jim, I can do that, but you're talking to me like that's, you know, maybe something that I'm going to get done in a half a day, and I'm estimating that's going to take 30 or 35 hours. Whoa, the moment I realized that made a whole world of difference in my understanding of workability. And so by what she was not saying, she was contributing. By what I was saying, I was contributing. Well, whose fault was that? There's no fault. There's just there's just a mess that needs to be cleaned up.
Yeah, people being people creates messes. And it's part of being human. And this is a really important piece. It's part of trying to do big things. I mean, you and Diane were trying to accomplish some really big things here in the city of Houston. When we try to do big things and we try to do big things with other people, we make messes. The idea behind this particular tool is to just accept that fact. And instead of trying to, you know, hustle to look good, pretend like there's not a mess.
Or to be perfect.
To be perfect. Right. Or to at least make people think we're perfect. not that I would know anything about that. You know, the idea here is that we believe, because we've seen this in so many different organizations, we believe that this tool is a way that an organization like Aspen can experience both really deep grace and also genuine accountability.
Yes.
And that those two things can exist at the same time, that we don't have to choose between grace and responsibility. Or responsibility, but that we can have both grace and responsibility or accountability.
And so just to remind you, when we do the integrity conversation like we did on the webinar, I don't think I said it in the webinar, but I often say to people, the four steps to cleaning up a mess or to honoring your word, you ought to memorize this. You ought to write it down on some little card somewhere. I mean, we now have hundreds and hundreds of people that we've coached who have said to us, learning the practice of cleaning up a mess has made a world of difference in my family life, in my work life, in my life at church, in my community life. And so let me just remind you what the four steps are. So the moment you recognize that there is a mess, then the first thing that you do is you acknowledge that you didn't keep your word. You acknowledge that you contributed to the mess. You acknowledge your part in that. And the second thing that you do is you offer a heart, is that you get present to the impact.
And that's now, where the magic is.
That's where the magic is. We say that all the time. So go back to the story of me and Diane and me asking Diane to do something that was going to take her 35 hours. And I thought it was going to take 3 hours. The moment I realized the impact of the request that I was making, I didn't want to do that to her. I would never have done that to her on purpose. I was lacking some information. And so when she told me what the impact was, it gave me access to something that I didn't have otherwise. And now it takes courage. Nobody woke up this morning and said, I want somebody to tell me how my behavior had negative impact on them or kept things from being workable for them. So it takes some courage. You have to grow your capacity to do this. You have to ask, tell me what the impact was. But that's the second step in the process.
And being willing to ask and then just listen to the answer.
Right.
We want to insert a step that says, well, explain why it wasn't my fault, or, right, give someone a lot of context so that, we don't need to do any of that. We just want to listen for what the impact is.
In fact, that may be the hardest part of the skill set, where you just take it in. Maybe what you do is you say, let me make sure that I've heard what you've said, and you say it back to them. And then you go away and you just sit with that without trying to fix it or, be responsible for it with that feedback. Now, in the moment, what you do is then you offer a heartfelt apology. I may have said this on the webinar, my mom used to say to me and my brother, apologize to your brother. I'm sorry. And all we were trying to do is get mom off our back. A heartfelt apology is an apology that says, I recognize that my behavior has had impact on you and I care about you as a human being. And it's not my intention to be hurtful or to make a mess, to contribute to there being a mess in your life.
Let me deal with what you just said. Let me address that, because think one place we get stuck here is, but I didn't intend to make a mess. Why do I have to clean up a mess that I didn't intend to make? And some of that is just our defensiveness. But some of that, I think, is we're going back to the idea of blame rather than the idea of responsibility. I think about getting really present to this one time when my kids were smaller and Rebecca was playing in the den, and Andrew and his friends went tearing through the den on their way outside, and Andrew stepped on Rebecca's hand. And I remember doing what your mother did, say you're sorry, right? And him arguing with me, but I didn't mean to. And me saying, well, she's crying. You can see the impact here. It doesn't matter if you meant to or not. And I mean, you know a little bit about Andrew. He could have argued with me about that all day and into the next day. But the thing that I was trying to get him to understand is that the emphasis is not on your intent. The emphasis is on the impact.
Right.
And until we can shift that emphasis, we're all just going to be defensive with each other.
Right. And then the fourth step after you've offered the heartfelt apology is that you repromise. And sometimes the repromising is I'm growing my capacity, right? Like, this requires me, go back to my story with Diane. Like, I just am a really assertive guy with a lot of ideas, and I move fast. And I probably did to Diane multiple times what I did, but she grew in her capacity to give me feedback about the impact. And I grew in my capacity to be more thoughtful in making requests. And so over time, I repromise so that I can grow my capacity. Sometimes what I do is I want to negotiate the promise. And so maybe Tricia asks me if I'll do something, and I say yes, because I want her to be happy with me. And in the moment, I'm not willing to, do whatever negotiations might have to be done to actually say no. And so I have to renegotiate the promise to say, here's what I am willing to give my word to, and that I want you to hold me accountable for. And we move ahead from there.
Do you remember one time we were doing doing this material with a group, and a woman came up to me and she was hot. She was mad.
I remember.
She slammed her notebook down in front of me and she said, "I am killing myself keeping all my promises. I don't need any more guilt from you about, you know, mm-hmm. not keeping my promises." And I had the presence of mind to just say, you know, okay, well, thanks for letting me know that. And, you know, that she was on her way to the personal reflection time. So I asked her, you know, just go do the personal reflection. And she came back later and she said, okay, I think I get it now. That maybe if I'm killing myself making all these promises, then maybe I need to repromise something different. And it was a big turning point for her and for me too. And I also think sometimes what we have to be able to say is, I can't currently keep this promise, but I will get into action to grow my skills, change this workflow, get help from someone else. I will do what it takes to be able to keep this promise that I'm making.
I'm working with a client who's the CEO of a whiskey company over in Austin, and we're doing some of this work with them. And he did what I thought was a brilliant thing, that if everybody in his company would take on, it would make a world of difference. He actually asked for some feedback about his integrity gaps. And he had created a really safe space where they gave him the feedback. And then he went through the four-step process. And in the fourth step, here's what he said. He said, you know, some of these things that are that are creating impact on you are deeply held habits for me. I don't wake up in the morning and think that's what I'm going to do. It just in the moment, like blinking or breathing, I do them. And so what I want you to hear is I'm giving my word to changing this behavior, and I'm going to need your help. I'm going to need you to hold me accountable. He said, please don't embarrass me in front of a group. But when you see me do something that I've said I'm not going to do, or not do something that I said I'm going to do, as quickly as you can get to me, you know, give me that feedback. I thought that was remarkable and amazing that that he would say, I'm making promises that I currently can't keep, and I'm going to need some encouragement and some accountability along the way that would make a huge difference.
That's a great story. Yeah. So I want to just show people what this looks like.
Okay.
By cleaning up a mess with you. Honestly, this is a mess I could probably clean up with you every single day. But it's also, I'm going to leave it pretty general so that people can read in their own stuff. But this is how this process would go maybe in our relationship. So Jim, I really need to clean up a mess with you. I told you that I would have that information for you by Friday, and it's not going to happen. And honestly, I hate to say this, but I think I realized yesterday morning that it wasn't going to happen. And I've just been not giving you that information since yesterday morning and trying to pretend like nothing is wrong. But the reality is, I know this causes problems for you, and I want to know what is the impact of this breakdown on you?
Sure. Yes, I will tell you what the impact is. I got to tell you, I value our relationship so much that what I'm tempted to do is to say, no big deal, everything's fine. Because you're asking, the truth is that when you withhold this kind of thing, when you pretend like nothing was wrong, and then I find out about it, and whether you tell me or you don't tell me, eventually I find out about it, right? And when I find out about it, what happens is I begin to wonder, what else is she not telling me?
Yeah.
And can I count on her, like you can't tell me everything, but can I count on her to tell me the things that really matter? I think that's the big impact. So I have the highest level of trust for you. And when that comes up, it erodes trust just a little bit. I think that's the impact.
I mean, that stings to hear that. And I totally get that. If I'm not telling you stuff, that you would wonder, well, what else is there that I'm holding on to? And just hearing you say that, I mean, I was sorry before, but I'm really sorry now because I don't want to erode trust. And I am genuinely sorry that it leaves you wondering about our ability to work together.
Thanks. Yeah, the erosion of trust is hard. For a whole variety of reasons, don't like that, but your apology helps a lot. I recognize that you didn't wake up in the morning and say, "Ooh, I want to withhold from Jim information that he needs." I know you didn't do that on purpose. It, like me, you're wired to, you know, for self-protection and for looking good. I'm that way too. On the one hand, I recognize that you're not to blame for all this, but it just helps a lot to know that you get it, that you get the impact on me. And so thanks. I really appreciate that.
Well, I want to repromise, and my temptation is to just have really good intentions and repromise the same thing. What I'm going to say to you is I get this information from Tim. I haven't gone to Tim to get the information. And what I need to repromise is that I will go to Tim, get the information in a timely way, and you will have it by next Friday.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so that's just kind of what it sounds like to mm-hmm. clean up a mess. You'll use your own words, you'll use your own phrases, but we want to give you some language. And even just being able to say, "Hey, I need to clean up a mess with you."
Can I say one more thing about all that?
Uh-huh.
So, we prepared for this and we've done a lot of this work.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just now taking on, like if it's the first time you've ever had the idea of there's a mess and I have some responsibility for cleaning that up, your heart may be in your throat. Your pulse may be running, you know, twice its normal speed. Your chest may be burning. You may have a knot in the pit of your stomach. That's the way your body responds when you're taking risk to learn new things. And so in the early stages, you just have to kind of grit your teeth and not let the fear stop you. Do it afraid.
Yeah.
And with promise over time, practice over time, what will happen, you'll begin to notice it comes easier. It still stings a little bit, but it's not debilitating. And so the do it afraid encouragement is what I want to offer to you.
Yeah. You and I have had plenty of conversations where my heart has been in my throat. And yes, absolutely.
And vice versa, exactly.
And we practice and it works.
Yep.
One question that often comes up here is, well, can you have this conversation in reverse? In other words, can I go to someone and say, "You have a mess to clean up with me"? And what I want to say about that is that I believe, yes, you can. This language lends itself to that. And tread really carefully because we all contribute to the results we're getting. So I think it's just so natural for us to say, well, you're to blame, so you have a mess, without looking at ourselves and how we've contributed to that. But having said that, I do think it's okay to say, "Hey, we've got a mess. You said you would do this. You know, it didn't get done. Now we have a breakdown, and I'd really like for you to clean this mess up with me. I would like to be able to tell you the impact of not getting this, and I'd really like for you to listen. Would you be willing to do that?" And that it is okay to have the conversation in that direction. I would say practice the other way first, where you're taking responsibility for cleaning up the mess first. Get good at that, and then you'll do a better job of reversing the flow.
Yeah. And then, you know, we've been doing this a long time, and we know some of the objections. So I hear everything you're saying, but one of those is, I didn't make this mess by myself. It wasn't my fault. What would you say to that person or to that objection?
I would say it doesn't matter. We have a mess. You know, again, this is so not about blame. It is just about recognizing that there's a mess. You know, we a few years ago dealt with a gigantic mess here in Houston when a tropical storm blew through. that was nobody's, or I guess a hurricane. It was a hurricane category, whatever, five. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that was no one's fault. But if we had just sat around saying, well, I'm not going to clean up this mess. I mean, we all got in there and helped clean up the mess because there was a mess to clean up. And I think when we get bogged down into blame, first of all, it makes it so that people don't want to clean up messes because it's so unpleasant.
Right.
And it's just not the point.
Right. Right. I mean, we're going to do a webinar in the future, and you've got a video that's available to you where we talk about systems thinking. And in systems thinking, one of the fundamental things is everybody's contributing. Everybody's contributing. It may be hard for you to see your contribution, but everybody is contributing. And if you can move away from blame to just say, I'm responsible for taking initiative to get this mess cleaned up, that's going to take you light years down the road.
So another yeah, but is, well, it's just words. This is just words. And I don't trust the repromise. Or maybe it's even, I don't trust myself to repromise. What would you say about that?
Yeah, so I would say two things. One is words are all we have, right? I mean, our words create the world that we live in. When I say to you, I'm going to do something, that creates expectations and it establishes a kind of playing field that we're living in. Not trusting the repromise, a part of what we've got to develop more than it's already there at Aspen is this idea that all of us are growing our capacity to give and keep our word. There's nobody at Aspen who does that perfectly. There's nobody at Aspen who does that all the time. And it's why it's in the design that we have breakdowns. It's in the design that human beings don't keep their promise. Creating a culture where we recognize that we're working on promises that we can't currently keep and that the cleaning up the mess is the thing that grows our capacity. Is there anything else you'd say about that?
No, I just love that idea that the more I practice cleaning up messes, the bigger messes I can clean up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I guess I just might add, if I am consistently repromising and still having breakdowns, something else is going on. And I need to take responsibility for figuring that out and not just defaulting to, you know, what do people say sometimes? I'd rather ask forgiveness than permission.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's what we're doing. We're just careening around making messes and then cleaning them up as if that makes everything okay.
Well, and that's probably a good place to do a little commercial for the coaching process. I mean, a coach can really help you sort all this out, develop a strategy for what you're going to say and how you're going to say it, how you're going to move ahead. And one of the byproducts of that will be that you'll grow your capacity to make and keep promises.
So let's just do this last one.
Okay.
But if I do this, I will look bad. It will undermine my reputation. It will undermine my authority to go around acknowledging that I'm making messes.
And actually what I would say is unless it's what you just described a while ago, where you're just careening around making messes everywhere you go, the opposite will be true. People's respect for you, their trust in you will grow when they see that you have the capacity, when you do make a mess, to take responsibility for helping get that cleaned up. It will increase their trust for you. It'll increase your influence, which for me is synonymous with authority in many ways. It's actually the opposite of what we think. I'll look bad or it's going to undermine my professional reputation or my authority.
Yeah, we have this assumption that vulnerability somehow separates us from people when it's exactly the opposite. I mean, I think about if I know there's a mess, my team knows there's a mess. It's really helpful to know that you know there's a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And when it seems like you don't know that, that actually erodes, like you said, that trust.
And so we're going to land this plane. We really appreciate you guys listening to us today, and we hope this has been helpful. We want to end by just asking the question, what's going to happen at Aspen when people regularly learn the skill of cleaning up their messes?
Well, I mean, you just named one of the big ones, which mm-hmm. is that trust. It's not that we trust each other to be perfect. It's right. that we trust each other to clean things up when things do break down. And that is a whole different kind of trust. It's a more workable kind of trust. And mm-hmm. That I just can't overstate how important that is.
Yeah, I think a second thing that'll happen is that the real accountability that you guys have been working on and really working for, accountability that exists alongside grace, not accountability or grace, but accountability and grace held in tension with one another that helps all of us grow and learn.
And then if everyone is owning their part, if everyone can see their part, we can actually have one-on-one collaborative conversations that lead to real solutions. Often Yay. What happens is we're just having these conversations and we have the conversation just long enough to make everybody feel better. But we haven't actually gotten to the solutions about how we get messes cleaned up. And we believe that if Aspen will take this head on, you will be able to have one-on-one conversations with each other or team-to-team conversations that actually help you solve big problems. So thanks for listening. And
we'll be back in a few weeks with another podcast.
Yeah. Be sure you make your, that you sign up for a time to be part of a group to talk about some of these ideas and make specific application to the Aspen system, and we'll see you next time.
Well, and if you'd like to get in the coaching process, be sure to reach out to Becky and let her know. Yeah. And we'll see you next time.
Okay.